So Bob McLean joins us in the studio at the farm today. How are you doing today, Bob?
Perfect day here, Jan. Thank you. It's just great.
Great to have you join us. It's always fun when I get musicians come into the studio to play. One of the things I'm always fascinated about is how people get into music, and particularly the music that they focus on. So certainly we look forward to talking about that. But you do have your guitar with you. You're renowned as a fingerstyle player. Why don't you play something for us first, and then let's chat a little bit about your music.
I was asked to play at a wedding last year, and about a year ago. And the bride-to-be came up and said, there's a Fleetwood Mac song that she really liked. I can do that. I can roll with all sorts of requests like that because, you know, I can read music and have a pretty good ear, sense of chords and all that. But she came up with this particular tune. She said, there's a Fleetwood Mac song called Songbird. And it's a stunner of a tune. And so I went and I listened to it. And she said she wanted to have a singer along with it. So I sent notes back and forth to her saying, you know, let me know who the singer is and we can get together a few times and practice. And then finally she said, I think I just need to do it as an instrumental. And I tell you, my heart sang when I heard that because that's what the song calls for. So I'd like to play Songbird for you.
Okay, fantastic song by Christine McVie. That's Bob McLean with his version of Christine McVie's Songbird. That was very beautiful.
Thank you.
Very, very
Thank
beautiful.
You. This is a gem of a tune. As soon as I listen to Christine singing it on YouTube, anybody listen to that, they'll just, it's a gorgeous melody. You have to love it. So
when you work at a song like that, take us through the process. So somebody suggests, could you play Songbird for us for an occasion? And then you'd go home, listen to the song, you know, watch it played, and then start to work out how you would go forward from there?
And I would also, yes, I would do that. I would also, YouTube is a musician's best friend. So you can, who else has done this? And what have they done with it? And so I listen to some other arrangements. And then at some point, I just stop and say, okay, I'm going to try this on my own. I may try a particular tuning on the guitar. I may, you know, I have this thing called a capo where you move this up and down. Not only does that change the key, but it also changes the sonority of the guitar. That what's coming across. I could crank this up and put it up a third of an octave higher. I could play it, but it wouldn't sound as rich, perhaps. So those are the decisions that I look to make, and the tuning that I use, and a key. And then I just I put it all together from there and work out the melody. Actually, one of the things is to have the melody playing in my head, perhaps for a couple of days, before actually getting into the guitar part too much, because I just want to internalize that.
Did you actually grow up in Cape Breton? Is that where you're originally from?
I was born in Cape Breton in Glace Bay, and I tell people, I have to be absolutely honest, my dad worked for Air Canada. And because he worked for Air Canada back in the 60s and 70s, unemployed at Air Canada, their kids got free passes anywhere Air Canada flew. We got four of those a year. So I was we were living in Montreal. Most of my education was in the province of Quebec. But we got down to Atlantic Canada at least once a year, sometimes for Christmas. Sometimes we'd go down to, you know, Myra. My grandparents had a cottage down there. We'd stay down there for a little bit or just visit for a day, whatever, stay and touch base with cousins. I did that until my mid-teens, and then I had nothing to do with music or Celtic stuff at all. I was into rock and roll. So.
And when did you learn to play guitar?
Age of 12. Yeah, I wanted a guitar when I was 10, and my parents thought, no, Bob should get the bagpipes. Can you believe it? But so I played a chanter, and I had access to some pipes for a little while. But by the time I was 12, finally my parents listened and said, okay, let's get the boy a guitar. And I haven't put it down since. So.
Did you have siblings that play music as well?
No, not at the time. I have a brother now who plays a lot of guitar, but he didn't start doing that until I was in my 20s, probably. So
when you started as a 12-year-old, was it a natural thing for you? I always imagine that people who start to play music in any form of professional way, it becomes a really natural part of who they are, and picking up the guitar is, it's not something you're forced to do. I was always, if I think about my own childhood, I mean, playing an instrument, as much as I love music, was not something that I could really force myself to do. And I still to this day don't know why that is the case, because I do really love music, but it seems that I'm really into music appreciation and not necessarily into, music performance.
I started taking lessons. I took about 10 or 12 lessons and did not like that approach. I just wanted to learn on my own. And that's what I told my parents. I just want to learn on my own. Let me plunk away. It might take longer. I didn't realize at the time that, had I smartened up a little bit, lessons probably would have been a good thing. But I was a stubborn 12-year-old, so I had to learn it on my own. I became sort of like, my parents never had to tell me to practice anything. If anything, it was just put that thing down because supper's ready. Put that thing down because you have homework to do. And I tell you, a lot more guitar was played than homework done. So growing up, no one ever had to tell me to practice. I was playing all the time and just couldn't put it down most of the time.
And in those days, what sort of music were you playing? I mean, is it mainly pop guitar, singer-songwriters from the time?
At the time, starting out, it was a lot of rock and roll stuff. The stuff that, local bands in Montreal at the time, The Haunted, but we got into playing The Beatles, The Who, also anybody. And we had a local band that we all got together on. I was the lead guitar player at the time, so that was fun. That was my formative stuff in learning rock and roll, and I kept on doing that until probably my early 20s. Then I just hit this point where I said, I'm bored. That surprised me, that I was bored. What I was bored with was just the three-chord rock and roll. I wanted to do something more.
Did you play in a band at that time? Because that must have been around the time you were at McGill.
Right. And up until then, I was playing in a band. I was up until about a year and a half before I went to McGill, because that was a real woodshedding period where I just played nothing but classical guitar.
When you were in a band, that was rock and roll or straight rock?
I had an acoustic guitar. I was playing a little bit of that, so I was doing... just think of some of the Beatles stuff, some nice fingerstyle stuff, Julia, that sort of thing, which that was great for acoustic guitar. I love doing that. So I think if that probably taught me just to learn to play the guitar as an instrument itself, as opposed to a lead instrument in a band. That was a good thing.
But in your spare moments, you really wanted to gravitate to something more acoustic. You mentioned playing classically. That's a whole lot different, though, isn't it, from playing the sort of music you play today?
Yes, but at the same time, if you want to learn the guitar, it's probably one of the most formative approaches you can take. With that, you can go and you can play jazz. Julian Bream was a huge jazz player. That's what he got from his classical chops as he built all that stuff up. So many people that you hear out there, they have a classical foundation that they build on, but they go and they do other things. Jason Fowler, he learned at McGill. But you look at what he's doing now, and he when he picks up a classical guitar, it's a pop sound that's going to be that he's going to be working with, or jazz or whatever. But he's not going to be sitting there playing Bach. So, although he's probably capable of it. So,
you've thrown out some names: Julian Bream, Jason Fowler's in there as well. Yeah. Who are your major influences?
I think Martin Simpson is probably the biggest one. I love the guy. I love everything that he does. I love his sense of blues. I love the tunings that he does on guitar. More, I listen to his. I listen to what he produces, and it's just very musical coming at me. And I like that. If it's something super technical, I tend to get turned off by that. You know, you listen to someone like a Don Ross, who I love going to a Don Ross concert too, but you're hearing a lot of banging and tapping and percussion, and that's really fantastic. But for me, when I walk away at the end of the night, I want to have some tunes going through my head, and someone like a Martin Simpson will do that. And I saw him at Folkway. Mark Stutman had him at Folkway one time, and I said I'd pay $100 to go and listen to this guy. It cost a whole lot less. It was great. Yeah.
Let's play something else. What are you going to play for us this time?
I'm going to retune the guitar here.
Tuning always fascinates me because it seems like it's something that makes a huge difference. Can you explain the different tunings that you use, if that's not too big a question?
Well, first, it's a huge question because I've taught altered tunings. And you know, it's really interesting when you get a player who is grounded on basic chords for the guitar, and they heard about this thing called D-A-D-G-A-D, dadgad. And so they want to learn a little bit about that. And the first thing that they realize is every chord they've ever learned doesn't work. You can't play it. You know, when you play a D chord, it doesn't sound this. If I play a D chord, that's a nice sounding chord, but that's not a D chord. So it has a different sound. You have to just look at each tuning as just a little bit different and learn some basic chord shapes that will go along with that. But also you realize that there are secrets in there, that you realize you can play certain things that you can't play otherwise. And I'll play some. Permission to Dream is something that on one of my CDs that I'll play after this. But I do want to play something called The Sweetness of Mary. Thank you.
That's Bob McLean with The Sweetness of Mary on Folk Roots Radio today. He's joining us for a session at the farm. That was wonderful, Bob. Who wrote that piece?
Interesting. She's a Cape Breton lady by the name of Joan McDonald. And as the story goes, she grew up to play fiddle, learning it in Cape Breton. But then, as often is the case, she married some guy that said, I want to work in the auto business in Detroit. So he went to his building, manufacturing automobiles. And so she lived in Detroit, and she kept on playing and composing while she was in Detroit. And it was at some point that he retired, her husband retired, they moved back to Cape Breton, and someone looked at all these tunes and said, you got to do something with these, because they're good. So she started playing out live, and people started publishing her work, and that was one called The Sweetness of Mary that is becoming a bit of a Celtic standard these days.
Was that written originally for a fiddle then? And then
it was written for a fiddle,
and then arranged for guitar?
Yeah, Fiona and I, McCarley and McLean, we play that one as one of a part of a set. We actually start that as a five tune set. That's the opening tune to it. So,
and you play with Fiona McCarley, people will know from the Guelph Celtic Orchestra.
Yes,
she is the conductor and
director. She's a conductor, yeah.
But she plays in a duo with you, so she's playing fiddle and you're playing guitar?
Correct.
Yeah. And you play quite a bit, don't you?
As a duo?
Yeah.
We were pretty busy this summer. We played every museum in the area. We did some weddings. We did, some civic functions. And it was great. We played at the Guelph Civic Museum. That was a joy. That was a beautiful spot to play. So, yeah, we've had some really good times this summer playing.
Have you recorded it all together?
No.
Is that something you want to do?
Yeah. We just keep on working up repertoire, and every now and then we say that's one that will be the keeper, you know?
Yeah.
So, and something like that, Sweetness of Mary, that would be one of them.
Because there are a few YouTubes as well, if people want to check out YouTube, Fiona McCarley and Bob McLean playing together.
McCarley and McLean, they can find us there,
Yeah.
So that's great.
I'm going to ask you to go back to the tuning question. Because
sure, please.
The dadgad thing fascinates me because I didn't realize that, as you mentioned, I mean, it really changes everything when people actually start to look at different tunings. What does it do for you as a guitarist? It just opens up this whole different realm of the way you play?
Possibilities, yeah. I mean, I'm going to go back and just play a couple of things, if I may, from Sweetness of Mary. I'm going to talk at the same time here, so... That figure you just heard there, ba-da-ling. I couldn't get that chimey sound with those three notes ringing together at the same time with the regular guitar tuning. So I get that out of this. And those are the things that I look to explore. And as I'm playing around with the melody, I just realize I can get this sound to go along with it. And it's really quite wonderful. The other thing that this dadgad tuning gives is it's primarily known as a tuning used by a lot of Celtic people because you get a bit of a drone effect. You can play all sorts of chords all along at the same time. So you can get all these chords going at the same time as these drone notes. Celtic music is famous for it. The bagpipes. You listen to the Allan pipes, you listen to the Highland pipes, you listen to any of the Northumbrian pipes, whatever. They have these drones that are just going at the same time. So I can play, that's a D chord, sort of an E minor chord, sort of an F sharp minor, sort of a G, sort of an A. But what you're hearing all the time is... So that becomes part of the exercise, part of the enchantment of that tuning, is that you can have these drones going at the same time and work that into it. So
from the point of view of a composer or arranger, I really just... I mean, it opens up, I mentioned before, like just a whole new realm...
Possibilities.
Of possibilities.
Yeah. Every tuning does that. Yeah, I go back to, we were mentioning Don Ross. I had a conversation with him, like asked him almost, maybe this wasn't inappropriate. I said, how many tunings do you use? And he just quickly said, 129. 129 tunings. So what he does is for every composition that he does, he has a different tuning. And he'll use something just so obscure. He'll have A naturals and E flats and things that on a regular tuning. I don't know how you make that work, but he'll work it in, craft it into his song to make it work. So, and you need to hear something.
Yeah, I'd love to hear something of your own.
Love to play something for you here. This is I'd love to play something called Permission to Dream. This is in that Dadgad tuning. Before I play it, I'm just going to say, here's something to listen for. I've got two notes. Two different strings, but they're playing the same note. And I can play both of them at the same time and travel all over the neck of the guitar. Gives it a bit of a shimmery effect, because the two strings are actually quite different. One's a plain steel, the other is this has a wrapping on it. So I took advantage of that for Permission to Dream.
That's Bob McLean with Permission to Dream live on Folk Roots Radio today. He's joining us in the farm studio. Been chatting about his music. Had an opportunity to to play some songs. Let's talk about the recorded Bob McLean, because that's a tune you wrote yourself, and that's on the album Permission to Dream, obviously the title track of that album.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about your recorded work.
I need to do more, but the recorded work, 50% of it is going to be arrangements of Celtic material for guitar in different tunings or regular tuning. I think from my recorded work, I'm only thinking of one song that's actually in a regular tuning. Everything else seems to be altered. And then the others are like Permission to Dream, where it's something that I've composed, and so it's my own. But I've had a few people listen to my playing and say that when they listen to the CDs, that there is a Celtic thread that runs through it all. And that's not surprising, because I seem to focus more on that genre. So even if I'm doing some original compositions, it still is going to have a bit of a Celtic ornamentation kind of feel to it. So that runs through them, both Permission to Dream as well as Dancing on a String. So.
When you talk about feeling like you should be recording more,
what
are the reasons behind that? It's always fascinating to know, you know, when people say, oh, I really should be recording more. Well, what are the reasons that you feel like you should, and what's holding you back?
Well, the reason I should is because I should. What's holding me back up until recent years has been just full-time work. Yeah, just doing other things to make a living. So, you know, got a wife and kids and two cars in the driveway and all that. So that impinges on one's time. So,
are you able to make a living with your music now, or are you actually having to do other things to supplement?
I'm doing something to supplement. It's a part-time basis. I made a change about a year ago where I went to my employer and cut back on. I wanted to work part-time, and I was a very lucky guy. My employer said no, and within a week I had someone approach me saying that they're looking for somebody part-time, and was that something I'd be interested in? And I said, your timing is just impeccable. So I've been working part-time, just 4 mornings a week, and playing as much as I can. I've had a pretty busy summer, but this fall, my plan is to just relax on the gigging schedule a bit and just start spending more time in a studio and recording a lot of material that I've brought up, that I've developed over the past couple of years, over the past decade even. So
it seems to be that a lot of the musicians that I know, if you actually add up the amount of hours that they're spending in their music, which would probably account for a full-time job for most people.
Absolutely.
But they're also having to supplement their income with either part-time or full-time work, that often people end up, you know, 80 or 100 hours a week of work activity, even
yes.
though obviously, you know, 30 or 40 of it will be related to what they love to do, which is make music.
Yeah. And I do separate the two. One is work and the other is just what I do, which I'm a pretty lucky guy, because I'm able to do what I'm doing right now, which is playing an awful lot, and looking forward to just doing a whole lot more recording this fall so I can capture a lot of the things that I've developed over the past number of years. You know, I don't have a sense of leaving a legacy or anything like that. It is more just the whole idea of recording pushes you to just get really, really good with each piece that you do. All those little decisions that you think you don't need to make when you're playing live in a recording studio, decisions have to be made and very clear and practiced. So,
with the type of music that you make and putting an album together, my sense is that the most successful albums of the guitar instrumental type, whether they're Celtic or whether they're looking at other genres, tend to have that blend between perhaps pieces that are somewhat more well-known and then pieces that may be less well-known plus original compositions.
Yeah.
My sense is that's fairly important. Is that a reasonable thing to say?
I think it's reasonable, particularly when, you know, people pick up a CD by Tony McManus. I mean, Tony McManus surprises so many people, because he'll record a whole album of classical music. Bach, that's what he did last year. And he's a Celtic guitar player. So when he pulls that out, you just go, whoa, that's a little bit different. I'm interested in it.
You brought another instrument with you. We have a mandolin in the room. I was wondering if you might pick up that and play that for us.
Let's do that, yeah.
Tell us a little bit about the mandolin.
Well, The mandolin, it's a... I've owned 3 mandolins in my time. I've been to... I was down at the 12th Fret in Toronto. Had to take... I wanted to take a mandolin course over at the Goderich Celtic Festival. They have a school that they put on for a week, so I did that and played the mandolin for about 3 weeks after that, and then transferred everything back over to the guitar and kept on playing the guitar. And next thing you know, I'm selling the mandolin. And then I was at Folkway one time, and there's mandolin hanging on there. It looks really great price, nice quality. Played the thing. I said, that's going home. So I took it home and played it. And now I'm talking just regular mandolins. And pretty much the same thing happened. About 4 months later, I'm back in at Folkway saying, let's consign this. And it just wasn't connecting to me. Then I discovered something called the octave mandolin. Now, you have to realize the mandolin is a family of instruments, just like violin, viola, cello, bass. Well, you have the mandolin, mandola, mandocello, and I don't know if there's a bass mandolin. If there is one, they call it an Irish bouzouki, so it has a completely different name. But this is an octave mandolin, so it's equivalent to the cello in an orchestra. So a regular mandolin is going to have a tune like that. This is an octave lower. And why I like it is it's closer to a guitar. Again, it has such a different sound from the guitar. It's just fun to accompany songs on it. So
that's a fascinating insight. That you pick up an instrument twice and then it just doesn't resonate with you, but then finding an instrument the third time, which is, as you say, it's a little different. It's an octave lower. That really just seemed to really work for you.
Well, I just sighed there because you just. The word is inspiration. I walk into a store like Folkway or lots of nice high-end guitar stores, and I go and I play various instruments, and I want to hear one note on there that just has a richness or something to it. I played an octave mandolin there, and I said, I'm smitten. This is great. So I bought one, and then I realized the quality wasn't what I wanted. So this one I actually had made for me about 2 years ago from a fellow by the name of Bill Peterson in the States, and haven't looked back. So,
does it make it easy for you to move back and forwards between the instruments in a concert situation, with the fact that you mentioned that this is somewhat similar to the guitar? Is that okay to say that it's not such a big distinction if you're going from a guitar to a regular mandolin?
This is the range of the instrument is pretty close to a guitar, but the sound is what is the inspiration when you have, because this is, it has 8 strings on it. People may know a 12-string guitar where you have pairs of strings, and that's what this is. So that's one course. And when I'm playing that, I'm playing both at the same time. And you can hear the sound of it. It's lovely sound. So I don't know if that answered your question.
But it does, yeah. I feel like I'm getting educated, which thing. Well, but this is the whole, part of the why I enjoy talking to musicians about what they do. It's like trying to understand what is it that gets them excited about their music and keeps them wanting to grow, develop, or find new ways to do things.
Buy new instruments. I mean, there's guitarists are known for having guitar acquisition syndrome or a gas attack. And spouses usually don't relate well to that. Bob does not need a 9th guitar or a 16th guitar, but I have friends of mine who have 60 guitars. From my point of view, what I look for, and it's going back to that inspiration thing, if I have a guitar that is sitting around and I'm not touching it very much, like if I haven't opened the case in 2 years, I should move it on. And if I ever need a guitar like that again, just like the mandolin, I'll find one. For me, it's just inspiration. So when I go and I play something like this, I get sounds off the mandolin that I just will never get on, even with a fancy dadgad tuning guitar. So,
what are you going to play for us?
I'm going to play something called the Red-Haired Boy. And the Red-Haired Boy is... it's known as a hornpipe. Hornpipe has a... That's a hornpipe kind of feel, and you can play the Red-Haired Boy that way, but most people tend to want to take that jumpiness out of it and speed it up a little, and it becomes just a fabulous tune. So ¶¶
Bob McLean, Pipe on the Hob on Folk Roots Radio today, played on an octave mandolin. Is that how I pronounce it?
Yeah, and I got taken away with that one. I did another tune at the end called Out on the Ocean, because often when I'm playing one, it just leads.
You would just lead into another. It's like fiddle music. We have, you know, four tunes together that just, you know, move from one to the other.
Exactly. And, you know, I really love that with going to Highland games and listening to pipers play. Oftentimes you get the tattoo or you get all the bands out in the field, and that's fun. But for me, the best part is going into the woods where they're practicing and listening to them. Because then you can get right up close. You can watch the pipe major's foot. You can get the sense of the tempo. Watch the drummers up close. And it's just, it's exciting.
If people want to learn more about your music, how should they do that?
Well, they can, I've got a website out there, bobmclean.ca. That's M-A-C-L-E-A-N. B-O-B. Nope, no dots, no hyphens, no nothing. So bobmclean.ca, that does it. So.
And you love playing concerts of any type, but you also, as we mentioned at the start of this interview, do weddings and, you know, corporate events and any sort of situation where people are looking for perhaps someone to come play a little bit of guitar for an event.
That happens quite often. This summer has been interesting because this is the first time for the past year I've actually said I want to make my living playing guitar as much as possible. I have been a long-standing teacher at Folkway ever since they started that teaching studio. This is the first year I have not been been teaching there, because I said I want to play as much as I can. So where can you get a gig at Tuesday afternoon at 2 o'clock? Well, I've been playing at some seniors' residence and that sort of thing, and I got to tell you, that was a real eye opener. From the point of view that they don't care if you're a good guitar player. They don't care if you're even a really good singer. They just want you to be, and they want to be entertained, and they want to be entertained with a quality performance of a sort. So I'm not doing the fancy fingerstyle guitar stuff. I sing songs for them, and I want to play that. I've been using the octave mandolin for that, and so probably about half of what I'm doing is that particular audience, and I love playing pubs, but I got to tell you, you know, playing for some of these people, it's far more. I've played lots of pubs where 11 o'clock at night, I think the wallpaper will get more attention than I will. So that's not the case with this group. So.
You mentioned singing. I mean, you don't compose, but you do sing a few songs as well, obviously other people's work.
Absolutely, yeah.
Could we get you to maybe sing for us before we finish today?
We might be able to do that, yeah.
We'll swap the mandolin back for the guitar and then...
Oh, it might be on the mandolin too.
Okay, well, yeah. We have time for one piece of music. So whichever one you want to play.
Of a song?
Yeah.
If I'm going to be singing anything, it's going to be likely East Coast focused, or which is then going to lead you into, you know, even Scottish and Irish stuff too. So it's going to get a little loud. There's a band out there that you might have caught at Hillside and various other festivals called The Once.
Oh, I interviewed them this time.
Yes, no surprise. And they're a delightful trio, really delightful trio. And I was looking up some Newfoundland music, and I came across this tune called Jack the Sailor, and on the internet I saw that it was Once had recorded it. So I checked on YouTube, bought the CD, the whole thing, but that's what we're going to play here. So it's... Jack the sailor came on shore, as sure as it was his fortune. For he had plenty of gold in store, less time to sail the ocean. I'll go up to my true love's door to see if she loves me, yes or no. Say, Nance, will you wed? Say yes or no. Say, Nance, will you marry a sailor? Friend, Nance looked up all with a frown. Did you think I'd marry you? No, not I. I'll get a man of high renown. Did you think I'd marry a sailor? I'll go up to my true love's door to see if she loves me, yes or no. Say, Nance, will you wed? Say yes or no. Say, Nance, will you marry a sailor? Jack put his hands into his pockets, pulled out two handfuls of gold.
say, Nance, will you wed, say yes or no, say Nance, will you marry a sailor? I'll go up to my true love's door to see if she loves me, yes or no. Say, Nance, will you wed, say yes or no, say Nance, will you marry a sailor? Nance looked up all with a smile, the thought of the money in her heart did go. I've been joking all the while, it's sure I'll marry a sailor. Well, if you were joking, I was just, it's only a question of you I ask. I see it's money you'll invest, you'll not wed your sailor. Public line full of gold and silver coin, leaving Nance to fret and frown the day she views her sailor. I'll go up to my true love's door to see if she loves me, yes or no. Say, Nance, will you wed, say yes or no, say Nance, will you marry a sailor? I'll go up to my true love's door to see if she loves me, yes or no. Say, Nance, will you wed, say yes or no, say Nance, will you marry a sailor? Nance, will you wed, say yes or no, say Nance, will you marry a sailor?
That was absolutely wonderful. We had to wait and let that note sustain
it.
Yeah,
it sustains for about 40 seconds.
Yeah,
it's really
absolutely beautiful.
Yeah.
Bob McLean, it's been an absolute pleasure having you join us today. Remember, if you want more information about his music, check out his website at bobmclean.ca. We're going to finish with something from your recorded work, a beautiful track that I know I played before on this show, and that's The Rose of Allendale.
Yeah, that's a wonderful Scottish tune. I love, you know, the Rose of Anything or the Star of Belle Isle, the Star of Loughborough, the Star of County Down. There's always some lady in the community that somebody needs to write a song about. So that's what the Rose of Allendale is. And we actually had Alison Lupton on flute with this one, too.
Oh, very nice. Bob, it's been an absolute pleasure. We'll leave you today with Rose of Allendale from Bob McLean. You can find that on the album Permission to Dream. You've been listening to Folk Roots Radio, and I'm Jan Hall.